turning to the Middle East, and there are three distinct storylines today that are worth treating with some precision because they're interconnected, but not identical. First, Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei is dead. His funeral procession is underway in Tehran. And in the middle of that, President Trump is publicly warning that Iran must accept a deal or the United States will, quote, finish the job. That is an extraordinary statement to make during an opponent's leadership transition.
From a strategic standpoint, this is either masterful pressure or genuinely destabilizing, depending on your read. The argument for pressure is that Iran's new leadership has to make a fundamental choice about the country's direction before they've even settled into power. Whoever emerges as Khamenei's successor, and that succession process is genuinely uncertain, has to decide whether to continue the hardline nuclear posture or use the transition as political cover to come to terms. Trump's statement is designed to make the cost of the hardline option feel concrete.
But here's where I'd push back. Iran's political structure doesn't work on a timeline that matches American impatience. The assembly of experts has to meet, deliberate, and select a new supreme leader, a process that could take weeks. During that period, no Iranian official has the domestic standing to sign a nuclear deal, even if they wanted to. Threatening military action while the country's political system is in a legitimacy vacuum doesn't create productive pressure. It gives hardliners the narrative they need. America is attacking us while we're burying our leader.
Israel made its own statement on the same day, warning that any future Iranian leader who threatens Israel will face what Khamenei faced. That's a deterrence message wrapped in a threat, and it lands very differently in Tehran than Washington perhaps intends. The Israelis are establishing what they're presenting as a permanent doctrine: threaten us, and we will remove you personally. Whether that doctrine actually deters or hardens the next supreme leader is the strategic question.
Now let's go to Syria, because Emmanuel Macron's visit to Damascus was genuinely significant before the explosions near his hotel made it dramatic. This is a landmark visit. France has historically been deeply involved in Syrian affairs, going back to the League of Nations mandate, and Macron's presence in Damascus signals European engagement with the post-Assad government. But explosions near where a G7 head of state is staying is both a security failure and a political message from whoever set them off. We don't yet know who was responsible, but the timing, during a visit designed to signal stability and normalization, is obviously not accidental.
And then there's the Lebanon-Israel story, which is actually more quietly consequential than either the Iran threat or the Damascus explosions. The two sides are scheduled to hold talks in Rome next week about Israeli withdrawal. There is still Israeli military presence in southern Lebanon following the 2024 conflict, and the question of where the line gets drawn, how much of the buffer zone Israel retains, whether Hezbollah reconstitutes along the border, is one of those issues that can remain a low-level managed tension or can explode. Rome talks mean there's still a diplomatic track alive, which is worth noting when everything else in the region feels like it's accelerating toward confrontation.
The regional picture, taken together, is of a Middle East where multiple power vacuums are being contested at the same moment. Iran in transition, Syria trying to stabilize, Lebanon trying to negotiate an exit from the last war, and Israel projecting deterrent doctrine in all directions simultaneously. There is no single actor with enough leverage to set the terms for all of this at once, which is exactly when situations slip.